Welcome to OG Influencers, a podcast that explores your favorite artist's favorite artist's favorite artist.
Now let's find out who's the OG.
Starring Haley Hart and Cece Ellsberg.
Hello, loves. Welcome to OG Influencers, or rather, welcome us back to OG Influencers. It's been a minute.
Many minutes. 6 months worth of minutes?
Well, what a year.
What?
Let's just ignore the fact that we've been gone. It's 2020.
Here's what you missed.
Cece, how are you?
Haley told me she was going to ask me this question. It's a very loaded question, yeah, and I felt like I had to answer it right. And so I really had to think about this, and now this question is lasting longer than you probably thought it would. But while I was washing my hands in your bathroom, the phrase, I was rocking out with my socks out, came to mind, which is not even the saying. So that will be my answer.
It's new. It's a new saying, okay? And it's fine to wear socks in the summer.
But like,
that's what you're worried about.
But because of the pandemic, I've been wearing those socks for like longer than I should.
Many, many, many
months.
If you
know what I mean.
Yeah, we've been in the house, we've been wearing the same socks. It doesn't matter how much laundry you do.
Since the last podcast came out, same pair of socks.
Same pair of socks. And let me tell you, they smell great.
Thank you. That was my answer. Haley, how you been doing?
I'm fine. I have all the time in the world, but I am the least motivated that I've ever been.
A beautiful answer. Totally relatable, too.
Oh, well, I hope so. If I'm the only one who's fucking sitting in my house rewatching Tiger King.
You didn't get enough the first time around?
Oh, yeah. I need that chaotic energy because there's nothing happening around here.
Agreed. Totally agreed. Gotta get your drama where it is.
Oh, and
Carol
it is.
B. Joe.
It is at the Joe Exotic Zoo. Mm-hmm. Let me tell
you. Did you hear? Okay, this is a total tangent from anything that has to do with our podcast.
Oh,
but,
great.
Okay, is it WAP or is it WAP?
It's WAP.
WAP.
And we're not going to say what it means.
We're not. If you don't know, Google it. Ask your mom.
WAP? Yeah. Ask your dad.
Ask your dad. But in the WAP music video, apparently there are some big cats.
Oh,
and
yes.
Carol Baskin apparently was like, abuse. But then everyone watched the music video and was like, those really look like CGI. Like, I don't think those are
they
real.
Were animated?
Well, I guess I don't know the conclusion, but I just wanted to say that Carol Baskin is still relevant outside of Joe Exotic. This is old news, though. This is like...
This is from April.
This is so old.
You know how many... Oh, God.
How many things have happened since?
What have I been doing? I don't know. I've been doing a lot of DIY.
We both have. Haley, I know, has been mad into the scrunchie game.
Oh, big. I'm finding fun fabrics, and I'm making them into scrunchies and putting them in my hair and just leaving my hair up for a week at a time, no shower.
We both have exchanged stories about how our thin hair has managed to form dreadlocks at the nape of our neck.
Yes.
Not a dreadlock. Just a single
just
dread.
One.
Just a mat.
Unintentionally,
not even
of
a
course.
Dread. It's a mat. Just like
just
so
laying.
Knotted. Yeah. So
I managed to brush mine out. You know?
I did too. It took
did
a lot of conditioner and a fine tooth comb.
But here we are. We made it. And this is episode 14. We are going to talk about celebrity chefs.
Yes. And, okay, so maybe you're wondering, why are you telling us that? Normally you make us wait to figure out what the fuck you're going to talk about.
Yeah, good point. We're back, and we're better than ever.
We revamped our format.
There is a new format.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of talking about three influencers each, we're going to talk about three influencers total. So it'll make this show a bit shorter. We'll get out some more content. We get to talk about the people we love. But can I just say, before we even start, it was really hard to choose just three total.
Oh,
especially with celebrity chefs. I already want to do another celebrity chef show.
We totally can. Because there's celebrity.
Emeril Lagasse. Guy Fieri.
Oh.
Bobby Flay.
I think we should do a whole, like, alternative chef episode. Like, I want to talk about that dude that did Bizarre Foods. I already forget his name.
I want to talk about the dudes that are cooking human flesh.
Me too.
So
we'll have a cannibalism episode.
We already talked about Ed Gein.
We did.
So that said, today I'm going to do the first two influencers and Cece will cover our OG.
Yes. And also, did we mention the deviation from the network?
No.
Yes. So, yes. Last, you guys may have heard, you were hearing like Zima Podcasting Network in our intros and outros and stuff, and we were telling you to check out their other shows. I don't actually know if any other Zima podcasting shows are still going, but the Zima Podcasting Network is no more. Graham has moved on to other awesome things, and so this is now a solo production, and it by is. Solo, I mean a duo production between Haley and
I.
And
by solo, I mean two.
But by solo, I mean two.
Yeah.
So, yes.
So, welcome to the pod.
Yeah.
We're back. We
it's
hope
totally
you tune
ours.
In. Please subscribe wherever you're listening.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Anyway.
Anywhere.
So let's crack into it. Let's get into these babies. I just lost my show notes already, but it's fine. It's cool. It's cool.
I feel like we need to, like, end each of these people with a mwah, chef's kiss.
You're so right. Okay, so, Cece, I also didn't tell you I was going to do this. But I have a question for you. We're talking about celebrity chefs. Have you ever worked in the food service industry?
Yes.
Doing what?
Serving, okay. Bartending. I've food ran. I have bussed. I've done everything short of being like a line cook.
Okay.
Like I've dishwashed. I have been like a salad / like mild appetizer prepper. Like
Cece's the one making the house salad back there.
Oh, I toss it with my gloved hand. I take the breadsticks out
tomato.
Of the warmer and I pour your marinara into a little dish.
Wow,
I do
that sounds
for you.
Like a really classy restaurant.
Oh, Roman Candle.
Shout out. So
it's closed now in Whitefish Bay. But the Madison location is still alive and I actually got pizza from there today. The Vegan Destroyer is excellent. Get the fireworks sauce. Short plug. We're not sponsored.
Cece is plugging a company she does not work for anymore.
That's true. I'm
but
just loyal.
It's a shout out.
Think about that, folks. I'm loyal. Hire me.
Cece still has a job.
I do still have a job and I am still working in the food industry. So, you know... These are pandemic times.
Oh, big. It's true.
You gotta do what you gotta do. Literally, at work is the only time I feel normal.
So. Oh, I don't.
At work?
I work from home. It's just like chilling. I worked in the food service industry. My first job, I don't know if you remember, Cece, but I got my license on a Wednesday. I crashed my car that Friday. And
I remember that.
I had to get a job frosting donuts. So I could pay for the repairs.
At Church Road Station.
Yes. So, and I also worked at Cousin Subs for a very quick little bit of time.
Oh, I don't remember that.
I'm just not one who loves to work.
But you love your current job.
But
I do. Matters.
And I also really love cooking. So.
You've got all the expertise one needs.
I'm a foodie, everybody.
She's a foodie. The funny thing is, so as you ask, have you worked in the food industry? When you look at the places we've worked, a gas station, a pizza place that closed down. After that, I worked at a bar, and now I work at a brewery. The last two establishments are still around, but like these are not
for long.
These are not
not once we step in the doors.
Ooh,
we tie that apron.
But then when we look at the people we're talking about today and the restaurants they worked at, there's just like, they're like god tier. And yeah,
okay.
Totally next level.
That said, let's talk about our first guy. And they're all men.
And they're all white.
And they're all very hot.
Yeah.
Especially our first guy. Like when I see him, I'm just like, it's another level of attraction, personally.
I agree. He's one of those people that is we're trying not to be very superficial here, but he's someone you would look at and say, wow, what a conventionally attractive man.
Uh-huh.
But then you look at his videos and you like get to know him, get to know his like TV persona, and he just becomes that much more attractive because he's a nice person.
Oh, so you're saying you're hot. You know how to cook. You can build a house. Like, come on.
Stop.
Anyway. So cooking and celebrity chefs, it's a major industry affected by the rise in technology. There are more at-home chefs than ever, creating YouTube channels, blogging personal recipes. We've all been there where you have to read about how this woman's husband loves her lasagna. Like, and then you get to the recipe, paragraphs and paragraphs down.
Oh, I scroll through those.
Oh, I sometimes I read them. Do you take the time to read them? Sometimes.
That probably adds to the whole experience.
Yeah. I would even consider an at-home chef someone who posts a sexy meal shot on Instagram.
Sure.
Go off, you know.
Show it off.
That's what we can do. We all have our computer in our pocket, as a boomer would say. So our first influencer is someone who took his job at a major food magazine and entertainment company to the next level. We're talking about Brad Leone and his role at Bon Appetit magazine.
I just want to add, I don't know if you included this at all, and I wish I had the user who said this. It was a Reddit comment.
Oh.
But this person described Brad Leone as, like, the golden retriever of human beings. Like, everybody loves him.
I feel that. And I love that.
Yes.
And that's true. He's so sweet. But I don't want to fuck a golden retriever.
There you go. Hot take.
It says, you'll notice that I paused before I made that joke because I didn't know if I should say it. But it's 2020. We can joke about bestiality. Because
nothing
is funny anymore.
Everything is on the table.
The chef's table.
The chef's
Anyone?
Table.
So, thank you. Brad was born in New Jersey, in the United States, in 1985. There's not much about him. He's our first influencer. They're usually the shortest. He's not revealed much about his young life, but from what I've seen on YouTube, watching his series, he grew up loving the outdoors and fishing and hunting with his father. Learning to cook, learning to appreciate where food comes from. He moved to NYC and studied at a private university called the Institute of Culinary Education. And then he was hired after graduating by Bon Appetit. He was a kitchen assistant, which he described as, quote, a glorified dishwashing job.
Ooh.
And under that note, I wrote back pain.
Yes. So this is something that I'll kind of cover with my person or the OG, but how kind of toxic this community is, or I guess industry of like the fine dining culinary arts, where like it really is like you get like they're totally an industry that would have these like unpaid internships, but it's like you're there for years. And then when they do finally start paying you, you're like grabbing coffee and wiping the sweat off of whoever's brow. You know, it's like, it is one of those where like you pay your dues so much and you have to endure so much abuse, which I don't know if he endured that, but at least, you know, a glorified dishwashing job.
Yeah. It's not unusual in this industry, but I'm not going to say I agree with it because as a former dishwasher, I hated it.
Oh, I did too. But Friday fish fries, dishwashing, my nightmare.
So he was promoted to test kitchen manager. However, he found even more success in the Bon Appetit test kitchen after the premiere of his laid back, cool guy, modern editing show, It's Alive. And I told Cece about this show a couple months ago. Did you have a chance to watch it?
I watched one episode, and it's because it also had Orville Peck.
Oh, yes.
Love. In it, and what they did, they made elotes, I think is how you say that. Like Mexican street corn. Yeah. And they were funny, and they were like riffing the whole time. And just like, they were fun to watch. And also, I love Mexican street corn.
Same.
I buy it whenever I'm at like a street festival or anything, if there's a spot. It is so expensive, though, and the ingredients are so cheap.
It's like $8 for corn in a cup.
But with a little mayo and like some seasoning.
It is worth it because I've tried to mimic it at home during quarantine. I can't do it. Yeah. I don't have the magic touch.
It's just not as satisfying. Also, when other people make food.
Oh, big.
You know what I mean?
A salad is never as good when you make it yourself.
This is true.
It's so weird. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe
I feel like I've heard
the right amount of dressing.
Oh, dude, maybe. I've heard that maybe it's a smell thing. Like, you get desensitized because you're smelling it the whole time. So when you go and take a bite, you're like, I've been smelling. It's not as...
What
It doesn't scent? Pack as much of a punch.
What scent does lettuce have, Cece?
Dirt.
No truer statement has ever been said. So Brad's on It's Alive. The first series of episodes were really about his signature style of cooking, which is fermentation. So fermentation is when you put something in a jar, you leave it sit for a while. Think like pickles, fermented garlic, miso, kimchi. Those are
beer.
All. What's that?
Beer.
Beer is fermented
beer and wine.
Too.
Yeah.
Cece knows all about it. As the show went on, though, it evolved into a travel show where they began to film on location and make foods unique to that region. So it gets so fun. They go noodling, which is like put your hand in a catfish hole. It's like so, it's the best. I can't recommend It's Alive enough. It is hilarious. I watch them over and over again. So it's a very popular online cooking / comedy show with viewers and stans all over the world who would die for Brad, including myself.
Isn't, okay, just because we've mentioned that a lot, is he happily married? Yes? No?
I don't know if he's married, but he has two children with a woman named Peggy.
Oh, cute.
I'm not trying to intrude.
Peggy, we're not homewreckers, we're just appreciating.
Yes, I very much appreciate him. From a distance, a very far distance.
A friendship.
Not coming in on your fucking long-term relationship, but let me know if you guys break up. Another joke.
Another joke.
Okay, so a brief aside about the magazine Bon Appetit. They've been in some major controversy in 2020. So after the Black Lives Matter movement was brought back into focus when George Floyd was killed in Minneapolis, Minnesota, the editor-in-chief, Adam Rappaport, he's the editor-in-chief of Bon Appetit, he was brought into question after some racist photos were revealed. So the photos that were originally posted by his wife on Instagram in 2013 were of Rappaport in racial brown face on Halloween in 2004. He was wearing a t-shirt, a do-rag, silver chains, and a baseball cap embroidered with Bronx. So that's a reference to the New York City borough, and that's where many Puerto Ricans reside. Clearly problematic.
Clearly.
Above and beyond problematic. He did step down immediately, but that doesn't excuse anything that he did.
What a timeline, too. So the photos were taken in 2004,
mm-hmm.
and his wife posts them on Instagram in 2013.
Must have been a throwback or something.
But, like, yeah.
Why?
That's so bizarre. You'd think in 2013 you would realize these are bad.
Well, people love to say that. They go, oh, it was a different time. And it's like, here's all this fucking time that you had to educate yourself.
Yeah, 2004 to 2013 is 9 years.
Yeah.
And in 9 years,
and even in 2004,
changed.
I can't see that being okay.
But, right? No, yeah.
So aside from these photos, this obvious proof of racist behavior, he was also accused of discriminating against employees of color at Bon Appetit. So one of the food editors or video production editors named Sola called him out because allegedly, employees of color were paid significantly less than their white counterparts in the kitchen. So Sola was being paid, I think, nothing for each video. And all the white counterparts were contracted, were making money on this. But she was making amazing videos, by the way, and not getting paid.
So it was like that unpaid internship kind of vibe. Like, look, we're giving you exposure and all this stuff, but everyone else is getting exposure plus wages.
It was obviously racially motivated.
And you can't And there's no excusing that because mm-hmm. now you have these photos and it's just like proof.
Here's all the reasons that you're a fucking racist.
Here's all the reasons. So he stepped down. That's good.
He did.
And this is not Brad. This is the...
This is Adam Rappaport, the editor-in-chief of Bon Appetit magazine, which is owned by Condé Nast.
So how did that affect Brad's show at all?
So Adam stepped down as editor-in-chief. Mm-hmm. And then since the news, many of the Bon Appetit test kitchen staff has also left the test kitchen in solidarity with their BIPOC peers. So that doesn't necessarily mean they're leaving the company, though. So some of them are going to continue to be editors at the magazine, but not appear in the test kitchen videos. But so far, Brad has not made a statement about leaving, but he has definitely been posting about being in solidarity with Sola and other employees of color at Bon Appetit. But yeah, so far he has not left.
Are they like shut down? Like, is he still making videos?
Since the reports, they haven't made one video or they haven't released one video.
Okay.
So they were making videos from home for a while. They weren't as produced, obviously.
Sure. They're not in that fancy kitchen with mm-hmm. like 30 ovens and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
The fermentation station, which yeah. Brad is known for. But since then, they haven't released one video. So who knows when they're coming back? I think I saw September, but I don't know.
Yeah.
So that's the end of Brad. Well, not the end. I mean, he's still kicking.
He's young. All of these guys are relatively young that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Like, none of them are dead.
Nope. Usually they're all alive.
Usually the OG's dead.
Yeah. Not today.
No.
So Brad's series, It's Alive, reminds me a lot of a certain celebrity chef that has a YouTube series where he travels the world and makes dishes specific to the culture and region. And that is
dun, 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 dun.
None other than Gordon Ramsay.
Who honestly, Gordon, if we're all, I mean, I don't know. You have a lot more chef knowledge than I do. But ooh. When I think chef,
thank you.
He is the face that I see.
Oh, yes.
Just because.
Same.
How, you can't ignore him. He won't let you.
No. I mean, he's a lot. I have a lot in common with this man in that we're always yelling. I actually kind included a photo on the drive of Gordon yelling.
Oh, like that's beautiful. I bet that was right before he did his idiot sandwich.
Gordon Ramsay's signature dish, I just wanted to mention, is beef Wellington. Which, personally, I've never had.
Me neither.
It looks so good. It is, like, steak wrapped in a, like, biscuit. Like, are you kidding me?
That seems
me?
Very English.
Oh, me. Big. Yeah. Well, actually.
Also Wellington.
Wellington. So, I actually wrote down some of the things that come to mind when I think of Gordon. We love him.
Love.
First, love. Secondly... we know him as the strict, harsh celebrity chef from shows like Hell's Kitchen, Master Chef, Kitchen Nightmares, and many more. But personally, I think I see through it.
What do you think is at the essence of this man?
It is very fun to watch him interact with the kid contestants on Master Chef Junior and with his family. So I know on the inside of that hard, hard, hard shell, he has a heart. A big one.
He's a marshmallow.
Yeah, he's a big old crisp marshmallow.
Crisp marshmallow.
Burnt right on the edge. But that's just some initial thoughts. I mean, come on. He's the best chef ever.
I want to learn more.
And I'm going to prove it.
Prove it.
So Gordon was actually born in Scotland. He lived there till he was 5 years old when his family moved to London. London.
London.
The family moved frequently, which Gordon says was due to his father's inability to keep a stable job. His father was an alcoholic and was sometimes abusive. His mother was a nurse. So we stan his mom.
Do you know if he had siblings?
He did.
T. I didn't get only child energy from him.
No. Major sibling energy. Gordon didn't initially want to become a chef. His dream was actually to be a professional soccer player.
Footy.
Footy.
Footy player. Or is that an Australian thing?
I don't know. It's football, so I think. Yeah. But that's so European. But at age 15, that dream came true. 15. Wow. He was recruited by the Glasgow Rangers, which it's Glasgow. Glasgow. He was only with them for a short time, though, because he was injured and his football career ended.
That would be very sad, I think, to be him. But I totally believe that because, you know, there's like that pro athlete energy.
Yes.
He totally has that.
Yeah. Like,
even though it did not last long.
So motivated, very competitive, I think. I get that energy.
Yes, competitive.
But also, like, he thinks his body is a temple. He knows his body is a temple.
And that includes
Beef Wellington.
Beef Wellington. Yes.
So his football career ended. He went back to school and studied hotel management. But then he moved on to cooking, and he was under the direction of some of the world's top chefs. And I won't name names.
You'll hear about it.
But we'll get to it. He became the head chef at a restaurant in London called Aubergine, hopefully. And it apparently failed, earning only a 2-star rating from Michelin.
Which is a big deal.
Okay.
Like, 2 stars is nothing to, what is that, sniff your nose at?
Oh.
What's that?
Tip your nose.
Tip your nose at. Sniff your nose.
Sniff your nose. So despite Aubergine's restaurant troubles, Ramsay won the Newcomer of the Year at the Katie Awards, which are like the Oscars of cooking. And that was in 1995. But before we continue, Cece, do you mind explaining what Michelin stars are?
Sure don't mind.
What's the system? Let me
know. Okay, so you've heard of Michelin stars, but what you have also heard of, a little bit more popular, Michelin tires.
Ooh, I'm a big blimp girl.
The Michelin
no,
man.
No, that's Goodyear.
Oh, shit, wrong tire brand. But you guys know the Michelin man. He looks super puffy.
Yeah.
Kind of swole.
Big swole.
Big swole energy.
Yeah.
Such a bizarre mascot.
love it.
So Michelin is a brand well known for its tires. It's a Paris-based company. And in the year 1900.
Whoa.
120-year anniversary. Happy birthday.
Yeah.
Michelin. But in the year 1900, they started releasing travel guides because, you know, no internet, no GPS. Mm-hmm. Travel guides to drivers, which pretty much just, like, mentioned notable stops in specific areas. So, like, there would be a Michelin guide for London. Oh, there'd be a Michelin like guide a for Paris. And it would have maps. It would have,
cool,
like, addresses of, I think, like, places you could get your car repaired, things to see. And what they started to put in these Michelin guides were restaurants, like, good places to eat.
That is great marketing.
Right? But the thing is, not just any restaurant makes it into the Michelin guide. Only the best of the best.
Oh, this is cool. So, I love a good origin story.
So what they started, so when they added the restaurants, what they did, they started to hire inspectors that would go around to restaurants that they heard were good. And what they would do, they would try the food and then submit reviews to Michelin that focused on the quality and flavor of food served, as well as mastery of culinary technique and personality of the dishes.
Personality?
Yes. Like, not, you can't just be good. You have to be unique and exceptional.
Okay. So I don't know if you know, were the people secret shoppers or were they, did they know that the food critic was coming?
So this is so fun. Do you, like, you guys remember Ratatouille, right? I told Haley, I was like, I should have watched that movie for research. But do you remember how that restaurant is, like, freaking out about the inspector coming? That is a thing where, like, inspectors had to try so hard to keep themselves anonymous because people would prepare and treat them exceptionally if they ever knew it was an inspector.
Yeah.
And they wanted to avoid that. They wanted everyone to be treated like an inspector. So they, people would wear, inspectors would wear disguises. They would.
Mustache.
Yes, literally, they would, like, plant seeds that they're going to be in this restaurant this day, and then they would go to a different one at the last minute. Like, anything to keep people on their toes. And they actually told inspectors to not divulge their profession to family.
Like a CIA agent.
Right? Like, to just say, oh, I work for the tire company. Or, oh, I write for whatever. You know what
I'm
I mean?
I'm a mechanic.
I'm a mechanic. I sell tires. Yeah. I'm the body inside the Michelin Man
mascot
outfit.
You know, it was modeled after me, myself.
Those roles were mine. Yeah. Like, all on the arm.
That is so cool.
Yeah, so it was, like, super covert and fun. The thing that I think gets kind of confusing is, like, people will say, oh, Gordon Ramsay is a 2-star Michelin chef. But chefs don't get the stars. It's mm-hmm. the restaurant.
Okay.
But where that kind of becomes changed is if, like, you're the head chef or if you're, I don't know the word. The sous chef? I don't know.
Head chef.
Head chef.
Sous chef is like an assistant.
Okay. If you're, like, the highest on the hierarchy person at the restaurant, you get the, I'm 2-star. Like, that becomes your honor. I think.
Okay.
So it's just the restaurants that get the stars. And so here is the rating system.
Okay.
You get 1 star. 1 star. For 1 star, the restaurant is considered very good in its category, but is limited in some way.
Hmm. Quality. So even 1 star.
Is an good. Honor.
So McDonald's isn't going to get a 1 star.
Oh, never. Never.
Culver's, on the other hand. Tea.
Perhaps.
Perhaps.
Yes. So getting a star rating is never a detriment.
Okay.
It always brings in business and you get in the Michelin guide.
Yeah.
And so, okay, 2 stars. The restaurant has excellent cuisine delivered in a unique way. The restaurant has something exceptional to offer and is worth a detour while traveling.
Ooh.
A detour. But 3 stars is this restaurant is not a detour. It is the destination.
Oh.
You that don't happen cool. across it. You go there to go there. And it is exceptional, worth the special trip. And the dishes are executed to perfection. That's what it says.
Wow.
Yes.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. You're a and genius. That's how.
That's really cool. I feel like I have a special little fun fact to tell all my friends now.
Michelin stars.
And I'm waiting for that Culver's review.
Have you ever eaten at a Michelin starred restaurant?
I wouldn't know if I had.
I certainly have not.
The best restaurant I ever went to. Let me just take a little detour and look it up.
Are you going to plug it? I already plugged the Roman Candle.
Well, the best one I ever went to was Manny's Steakhouse in Minneapolis. Holy balls. It was like insane.
Did you get steak?
I got a filet mignon and some fucking good potatoes. I don't know. There was just...
That
shrimp.
Nice.
There was sides. There was a cake.
Was the ambiance really nice too?
Oh my God. The Vikings were there at the time. So we had our own private little room because they had the rest of the restaurant.
Did you see them?
I don't know. I wouldn't know.
Oh, I'm sure out of uniform they all just look like tall men. Oh, mean mugging them across the restaurant.
Fuck them. Anyway, I don't know if it is Michelin star, and I don't know how to find that on Google, so I'm just giving up.
That's okay. Shout out to
Manny's.
Manny's Steakhouse.
Oh, so good, and so expensive, but very worth it. Not that I paid. Anyway, so apparently this 2-star Michelin rating, which sounds very good, I feel like there are expectations when you're a head chef, and you're at, like, a big restaurant in London with this big name, you want to have the 3. So 2 seems bad, but it's not. So they called it a failure that he got a 2-star Michelin rating.
Oh, my goodness.
It's 1998 now. Let's get back to the story. And Aubergine is starting to go under financially. So Gordon said, presumably... fuck this. And he started his own restaurant in London called Restaurant Gordon Ramsay. I love it. It's simple. It's to the point.
You know who works there.
Yeah. You know who is the boss. So a huge point in his television career actually came hand in hand with this new restaurant. His journey through creating the restaurant was filmed and became a hit TV show called Boiling Point.
Can I just say, you'll talk about the other titles. All of his shows have great titles. Boiling Point, chef's kiss, whoever came up with that.
So this restaurant, Restaurant Gordon Ramsay, earned a 3-star rating from Michelin and became a huge destination for 90s era foodies in London. So that's great. Now we know the rating system. We know that's the best you can get. He's doing awesome.
Where do you go from there?
Let me tell you. after the success is when more television success came. So he's creating restaurants all around the world, but he's also appearing on MasterChef, his show Boiling Point, Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares, Hell's Kitchen.
We love it.
And in 2005, he brought Hell's Kitchen's, overseas to the U.S. And it was a hit. It's a great success. We all know it. I hope we all love it. If you don't, click off.
This is not the pod for you.
There's just something about having dinner, going up to the couch, turning on Food Network channel, and watching Gordon Ramsay yell at someone right in their face.
God, and he is the king of doing that thing where he'll be like, so-and-so, you are shit. So-and-so, step forward. Today, you were an exceptional piece of shit. And it will just like totally make you think he's about to compliment you and then he'll just rip you a new one.
He's you never know what's gonna happen.
Do not expect praise. If you're being praised, it's a trap.
If you're being praised, you're still probably had some shit scallions.
And he'll let you know.
So the list goes on and on with his success in culinary TV. As I'm sure we all know. But outside of television, he's written over 20 books. Including cookbooks and an autobiography.
Nice.
He has a slew of restaurants all over the world, and he was inducted into the Culinary Hall of Fame in 2013. So he's the fucking tip top, you know? He's actually the 33rd most paid celebrity in the world. It's 33 seems like a high number. In this case, it is not. he made $62 million last year.
Wow.
Yeah. So he's got restaurants, he's got books, he's got brands, he has
he's got an empire. Shows.
Oh, yeah. He's the king. And then I wrote, these days, in quarantine, he makes frequent appearances on his daughter's TikTok.
Oh, fun.
I love watching those. He dances alongside her to viral dances. He also has a bit online where he rates meals that were cooked by at-home chefs like you or me.
Like, so, he watches videos of people, or?
Like, someone will post their, like, I don't know, chicken fried steak and potatoes.
Like, the Instagram kind of?
Sure, picture. Yeah, on Twitter, Instagram, and he'll say, Gordon Ramsay, what do you think of this? And then he films himself saying, that looks like a pile of shit, you know? So, I mean, he has a brand, he loves the brand, we love the brand, I don't know. And then we always love to mention the charity work that celebrities do. And Gordon and his wife actually have the Gordon and Tana Ramsay Foundation to help support a children hospital's charity. So we love him. We stan him. He's the best. And I want him to yell in my face.
It would be an honor. A true honor. I love my favorite moment. Everyone's seen the video, but him getting down to pray with a little kid who was like looking at his souffle through the glass of an oven and was like, I don't know if it's going to rise. And the kid was really nervous. And he was like, let's pray. And they said, may the souffle rise and be very, it was just like very sweet. And
that's my favorite. Like, I love watching him yell at someone's face, like a grown adult. And then he will be so nice to these kids. It's so fun. He's such a sweet man.
Yes.
I mean, I'm talking like I know him personally, but I feel like I do.
Me and Gordon. Yeah. Oh, that's love Gordon.
Yeah. We like him.
Perfect. So do you want to learn a little bit more about those top chefs that Gordon was training under?
I would love to. After I pee.
Pee break.
I'm not pausing anything. I'm just running.
That's okay.
Okay.
This is where we would include a sponsor if we had sponsors. All right, and Haley is back from peeing.
I went to the bathroom.
So let's get into the OG influencer.
Our OG of the week.
A man with three names. And those names are Marco, Pierre, and White.
Wow.
Marco Pierre White.
You know him. You love him.
You love him. Do you know anything about Marco Pierre White?
I have seen photos of him. He has really cool curly hair.
I will talk about those photos.
Classically, like a chef. He looks like a chef.
So here's what I think of those photos. I think he looks...
We're talking about the black young, and white ones.
Moody. He's like wearing his uniform, but he's like out having a smoke break. He looks couture. He looks tired. He looks...
High fashion.
Like he may have... an addiction. I don't know. He looks like he has not slept. I don't know if he has any addiction. Oh. What I'm saying, though, is that these photos, I'll bring them up later, but they're used as, like, an example of, like, how unhealthy this industry can be sometimes. Because you look at these photos, and he looks glamorous, but also, like, he doesn't look like he feels good. Like, he looks tired and
sick. And
then
he's like, I didn't tell you could use these for this campaign. Why are you slandering me?
I'm sorry, Marco Pierre White. So, the T, Marco Pierre White. I just looked it up. He's 58. Yes, he's 58 years old.
Oh, it's not very old.
He was born on December 11th, 1961, Sagittarius. Mm. And Marco Pierre White is a British chef, restaurateur, and television personality. He is dubbed, he's recognized as the first official celebrity chef.
Wow.
And also is known as the enfant terrible of the UK restaurant scene, which I interpret as the terrible infant, known for throwing fits and being petty and vengeful. I'ma tell some stories, you'll like them.
Oh, I'm really excited.
Haley was mentioning signature dishes, and I was like, oh, I should do that for Marco, and I did a quick Google, and I just found this sentence, and I loved it. While he is known to serve authentically rich Italian dishes at some of his UK restaurants, Marco Pierre White's favorite bite is a ham sandwich with English mustard.
Basic.
Cute.
Keep it simple. Just nothing like a ham sandwich.
Love what you know. Okay, so... In 1994, at the age of 32, White became both the youngest chef and the first British chef to be awarded 3 Michelin stars. That record has since been broken, and as we know, like, lots of other people. Other people also have 3 Michelin stars, but he, at the time, 1994, was the youngest.
Wow.
He has trained many notable chefs. Hopefully I'll get all these names right. Mario Batali, Curtis Stone, Shannon Bennet, and Gordon Ramsay.
The big gourd.
He trained the big gourd. So he was the 3rd of 4 boys born to English chef Frank White and his Italian mother, Maria Rosa Gallina.
Mm.
And he left, so he, you know, normal upbringing, went to Allerton High School and didn't have any qualifications, but just decided leaving that he wanted to train as a chef.
Okay.
So he went to work at the Hotel St. George, and then at the Box Tree. Mm. But in 1981, he was like, I'm going to the big city. And he pulled a big move. Madonna did it, so many others. Mm-hmm. He said he went to London with £7.36, a box of books, and a bag of clothes.
Sounds like he didn't have a place to stay.
Right. Yeah, it sounds like any artist who makes a big leap to the city. And that's where he began his classical training with Albert and Michel Roux. At Le Gavroche.
Wow.
Very French. Fancy. He continued his training with many, many people. And it was in 1987 when White opened Harvey's in Wandsworth Common, London, where he won his first Michelin star almost immediately. And then the next year, he won his second star.
So both were one star?
I think that the first time, so the inspectors will come back to restaurants. I don't think it's like, you got your rating, that's the only rating you'll ever get. They come back, and so I think he went up a star.
Cool. Yeah, menus change. People change.
So then he became the chef patron of the restaurant Marco Pierre White. Oh. Apparently this is a very common naming convention
yeah.
for these chefs. in the dining room at the former Hyde Park Hotel, where he won his third Michelin star, and then moved to the Oak Room at Le Méridien Piccadilly Hotel. Nice. You know what? Now I'm questioning that. I don't know if it is 3 stars cumulative or if he won a star each year. I feel like it has to be 3 stars. Like,
I at mean, one go. If the restaurant is named after you, I hope it's 3.
I don't think so.
Let's give it to him.
I think that if you open a restaurant with a name like that, you have to at least have had 2 mm-hmm. Michelin stars. Yeah. Or people are like, you didn't earn this. He got 3 Michelin stars. Where do you go from there?
Let me tell you.
I mean, I don't know. It's a very interesting path he took. White worked for 17 years to pursue his ambition of being a chef. What? Ultimately, he found that, in spite of his accomplishments, recognition, and fame, his career did not provide him with adequate returns in his personal life.
What?
So in 1999, he retired and returned his Michelin stars.
He wasn't getting laid enough? Like, he didn't have time?
So he said, I have a quote from him. Quote, I was being judged by people who had less knowledge than me. So what was it truly worth? I gave Michelin inspectors too much respect and I belittled myself. I had 3 options. I could be a prisoner of my world and continue to work 6 days a week. I could live a lie and charge high prices and not be behind the stove. Or I could give my stars back, spend time with my children, and reinvent myself, end quote.
That is very emo, but... I mean, it sounds like he has some reasons for leaving.
It does. I get that. Like, I mean, I don't understand how you have the empire that Gordon Ramsay has and you still have time to be a dad. You know what I mean? I'm thinking an army of personal assistants.
Big. Yeah. Totally. But he said it himself. He doesn't want to lie and say he's the cook when he's not even there.
That's true. So very honest. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that's when he kind of. Wow.
So when you retire, you have to give him back.
I guess.
Sad.
So, while he was working, though, just a little bit of side note of some of the sassier things he's done. During his early career when he worked in the kitchen at Harvey's, White regularly ejected patrons from the restaurant if he took offense at their comments.
Oh.
He was having none of it. When a customer asked if he could have chips with his lunch, White hand-cut and personally cooked the chips, French fries, mm-hmm. for Americans, but charged the customer £25 for his time. A similar occurrence with a customer requested fried potatoes, where he charged $500.
Fried potatoes is different than chips?
Apparently. $500 to the customer just because he was offended. Could you imagine that being... First of all, ballsy enough to go to a fancy restaurant and asking for French fries.
Ugh.
And not just seeing they're not on the menu and moving on, mm-hmm. but saying, I would like French fries.
I hate that. And it reminds me of, like, I hate toddlers who go to Mexican restaurants and order, like, a cheeseburger. Like, I have beef with them.
The toddlers?
In more ways than one. Yeah.
The toddlers and people.
Yeah, I hate toddlers. Only at Mexican restaurants and only if they refuse to eat.
You said you had a lot in common with Gordon Ramsay. And I think that Gordon Ramsay likes toddlers, so.
You know what else, though? He likes Mexican food. And respect.
We're at an impasse.
Anyway, something I feel.
Also during his time at Harvey's, though, White would act... regularly would act unpredictably, from throwing cheese plates onto the wall to assaulting his head chef who had recently broke his leg. A quote from him, he says, quote, I used to go fucking insane, end quote.
I love how these chefs are very open with their swearing.
And tantrums.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of, I don't know, I'm like torn between, obviously, there's an immature way to handle your, but it's almost like there's an element of the way that they handle this that it is so mature. Because it's like, you don't hold anything back, you get it all out there, and then you move on.
Well, it's the vibe of the kitchen, I think.
It all is moving so fast that it's like, you don't have time to dwell and be offended. You just say what you're feeling and you get it all out there and the emotions are there and then you move on because you can't hold grudges in the kitchen.
It's totally a different environment than the dining area, for sure.
Oh, you hear pleasant instrumental classical music and then you hear screaming back in the kitchen. The
flippy door opens and you hear like a brief, fuck!
Sandwich! That's what you hear. Okay, and then this is the best story because it pertains to the second influencer. Mm. White once made Gordon Ramsay cry when Ramsay worked for him in Harvey's early in Ramsay's career. Quote, I don't recall what he'd done wrong, but I yelled at him and he lost it. Gordon crouched down in the corner of the kitchen, buried his head in his hands, and started sobbing, end quote.
Holy shit.
Which makes me think,
what could you have done to make him cry?
I know. It also makes me think about the influence of how you handle your emotions in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And does Gordon get his style from watching Marco Piero White do it first? He probably at least realized that it's okay to do it from him.
Here's one thing I do know. Brad doesn't yell at all.
That's why he's the golden retriever of humans. These are like the chihuahuas of...
What are those? Rottweilers.
Or, yes, a chihuahua with like a Rottweiler bark.
Yes. Big attitude, tiny body.
Yeah, tiny body. Very angry, frustrated.
That's crazy. Yes. But I guess that trait didn't make it all the way to Brad. So that's
part of progress. The evolution. Well, I think too, and we'll... And kind of like following the chain of influence, I think that you... When celebrity chefs started... being celebrities, like, you know, I don't think people were as, I mean, I don't know, maybe it was like less, it was harder to make the kitchen interesting or you needed that drama. But like now we have shows like The Great British Bake Off where sometimes it's just nice to see people be kind and cook.
I don't like it as much.
I love that show.
It, but like, if I'm having a self-care day, I want someone to get yelled at.
Oh my God.
Someone besides me.
Oh, to each their own, girl. To each their own. So he retired in 1999, cooked his final meal for a paying customer on December 23rd at the Oak Room, returned his Michelin stars, but then he became a restaurateur, which in my understanding is you're not the one cooking, but you're the one setting, you like... decide all the things.
Oh, like and a producer.
Kind of like a producer. Yes. Cool. Whereas maybe before they were the director, but now they're the producer.
Cool.
So he worked together with Jimmy LaHoud, and set up White Star Line, which they owned together like for several years. Oh, dude, right?
Weird.
Well, it did, and their partnership ended, so it sank, just like the Titanic.
They hit an iceberg.
Yes, so then he had a stake in the Yew Tree Inn, which is a 17th century dining pub near Highclere in Hampshire, which a 17th century dining pub seems so fun.
Do they, you probably don't know, but if they use like 17th century methods to cook it,
that would be cool. And like dish, like the whole dishes and everything, I would hope so. I'd hope they commit. But then had a falling out with his business partners and the pub was sold. But the Yew Tree Inn was the setting for Marco's Great British Feast, which was his first TV appearance in the summer of 2008.
Oh, so he's moving on.
Yes, and that's television. Where his television celebrity starts.
Cool.
So then he's in all kinds of stuff. He's in Hell's Kitchen in 2009. He did a lot with Hell's Kitchen Australia. This is funny. With
Gordon again.
Yes. So this is funny. This is one of those petty things I mentioned.
Nice.
White presented Hell's Kitchen Australia for the 7 Network, which aired in 2017, following matter-of-fact comments made by Master Chef Judge Matt Preston about White's sons admitting to spending $500,000 of his father's money on drugs and prostitution. So it happened. Oh. But Marco Piero White was like, don't talk about my son that way. So he joined the rival program to MasterChef, Hell's Kitchen, just to spite that MasterChef.
Well, you don't just reveal that. Did they air it? Was it live?
That's why. Oh, that the comment?
Yeah.
Oh, I hope. I don't think it was on TV, but I think it was.
You think you can say these things. Yeah, he did his research. He had that in his back pocket just to be fucking mean.
Yes. I love that. That's like the long form of like, oh, you'll regret that.
Yes.
Our show will be so popular. MasterChef versus
Hell's Kitchen. I didn't know that was a rivalry.
I didn't know that either.
Only because I love Hell's Kitchen so much. I don't even pay attention.
I know. What other shows are out there? I included a little bit about Knorr, K-N-O-R-R. Have you ever had, they have like these like pre-made rice and like noodle things. No. They're cheap as fuck. You can get like 10 for $10 at Pick and Save has them.
Oh.
Metro Market. And yeah, the reason why I bring that up is because it is like a very common, not fancy food. Like, mm-hmm. I bought it.
Okay.
You know, it's for everyone. It's not a highbrow food, if highbrow is a thing you can describe food as. I'm using comedy terms here. But Marco Pierre-White kind of became, like, a spokesperson. Like, he appeared in a bunch of UK advertisements for, like, the Knorr products. And people said he sold himself out as a chef. That was like a big controversy where they're like, how dare you? Mm. Like, you used to have Michelin stars and now you're selling stuff that people can make in microwaves.
There is this thing, and it's not the same now, but because people are like, get that coin, make that bag. We love if you're sponsored, whatever. Mm-hmm. Back then it was like, you're a sellout if you work with a company, or like a musician is a sellout if they sign to a big record label. And I'm glad it's changing, but I feel like that was a normal thing.
Right? Like, people just don't want to see you.
Yeah. They want to see you, like, be fucking kicked down and
have... Yeah.
But, like, come on.
And so, in response to people, like, telling him he sold out, Knorr replied with, quote, by working with companies like Knorr, it allows me to stand on a bigger stage and enrich people's lives. Michelin stars, they're my past. End quote. Which I kind of, I mean... As much as this guy is the terrible infant, I do think that some of his things resonate with me, that he's like, he's moved on and he's looking for things that make him happy and take care of him and give him money.
He made his money and now he's cool with whatever.
Right. And he's still around and doing things. Yeah. And I looked him up because I was like so curious about like, what's this man's doing anymore?
Mm-hmm.
And, All I saw on his website was that he has Marco Pierre White's steakhouse bar and grills all over the UK.
Oh, so he's got a bag. Like, yeah. He's good.
And that's what he does now. And I think he still makes television appearances as, like, guest judges and stuff. And then, like, the only other thing I have about him is that under personal life, Marco Pierre White has been married 3 times. Which you're allowed to divorce and remarry people.
As many times as you want.
Yes. I just remember it being full of affair and drama, and so I didn't want to get into it.
I wonder if he wants a fourth. I'm very available.
I love how you didn't, like, make a move on Gordon Ramsay.
No, not him.
No. Marco Pierre, but yeah, he's 58, and what I was going to say about the photos.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was just that, I mean, you can see. What do you think of this photo? This is the photo. He's described in this photo as looking young, angry, and sleepless, and beautiful in his chef whites.
This is the one I looked at, and I thought, that's a hot man. But, yeah, he looks tired.
Hot in the way that people think, like, the guys in American Horror Story.
Mm-hmm.
Who are like, what's vampires. That new thing?
A Victorian era child.
Yes, he looks.
He looks like he survives on rice and wheat.
First chef, he looks malnourished.
Yeah, big,
big.
So time. I mean, yeah, I don't want to get into it, but there's a lot of shit that happens in the kitchen.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Like, that's something I've always been curious about with these chefs. Like, Brad Leone seems a little bit more down to earth.
Yeah.
But, like, Marco Pierre White and Gordon Ramsay, since they became a chef, I would like to know, what is, like, the worst thing they've eaten? Like, have they been like me, where they've, like, had a breakdown and been like, today is a 3 hot pocket kind of night. And, like, in my microwave, like, do they do that? Or do they only eat, you know what I mean? Like, that's something I think about.
I think that even their snacks are elevated.
You're probably right.
Me, I love a good after-school quesadilla. That's what I call when you put the cheese in a tortilla and just heat it up for 30 seconds.
Yeah, we call them cheesy roll-ups.
Oh, yum.
Oh, yum. Delicious.
Those are the best.
My peak, like, week snack, Jessica Beatty, our friend from high school,
yeah.
Used to always give me crud when she would come over and ask for a snack, and I'd whip out a bag of pretzel sticks and salsa because we ate all the chips. That's, like, my weak snack.
There is something about, I just remember coming home from school eating so much fucking food.
Yes. After school snacks. That was because you would eat so early,
uh-huh,
and then you wouldn't 11. Eat for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
And if you did, like, a sport, like golf or something, too, yeah, and you'd get home at, like, 5:30.
And either there'd be a plate of food with plastic wrap over it waiting for you, or you have to make do with 3 bags of popcorn.
Yep.
In my personal experience.
In my personal experience, too. We don't want to presume for the rest of you all. Maybe yes. You guys are eating really well. I don't know. I'd like to think.
We've all changed here, quarantine. I've been making a lot of things.
Like newer things?
I learned how to make falafel.
No way, yum.
I have my family cookbook over there I've started to create based on some of my mom's recipes. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
I like that. My most adventurous things. Actually, a couple days ago, I made kale chips. Those are fun. Cool. Those are actually really easy.
Yeah.
The hardest thing I made, I tried dolmades, which are stuffed grape leaves. You put, like, rice in them. I burned the shit out of them, and the rice was undercooked. But I tried it. So I think Gordon and Brad and Marco would be proud.
Yeah, they'd be happy. And you were making a unique dish. I would give that a 1 star.
Thank you. Let's look back at what 1 star is. 1 star was. It is. The restaurant is considered very good in its category, but limited. Is limited in some way.
Food good, but burnt.
And rice undercooked. Somehow overcooked and undercooked at the same
Sounds
time.
Sounds like a hot oven.
Tea.
So, I hope you enjoyed this episode.
Mm-hmm.
We're back. I think we're better than ever.
I think so, too.
I'm excited. I'm so excited to put this out.
Yes, I'm too.
Yeah. So please subscribe, follow the pod, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you're listening right now. And we'd really appreciate it if you left a review on iTunes.
Yes, that would be very helpful.
Yeah.
And the oginfluencers@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. Email is totally live. I synced it up with my normal Gmail, so I'm actually going to be checking it now.
Sick.
But yeah, please, if you want to know anyone, you know, if you want to know anyone's influence, please holler.
We'll do the research for you.
Literally, this is just my hobby. If I see someone and I love them, I'm like, what was their childhood like?
Exactly.
Where did they get their education?
How much shit did they get and give in the kitchen?
What are their controversies?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I just wanted to mention this one more thing. Oh, we didn't talk about our sources real quick.
Oh, yeah.
New York Times for me, internationalculinarycenter.com, Wikipedia, as always, and Google Maps, because that's what told me that there were all those Marco Pierre White steakhouses.
Oh, great. I had biography.com, wikipedia.com, and youtube.com.
Thanks, y'all, for listening. Yeah. Please request people, though.
Yeah.
We're thinking of doing, like, a heavy hitter, major pop icon, and you could be the one who suggests it.
Oh, yeah, we want to know. We want to know what you want to know.
Let's know it together.
That's just great.
That's good, just good great. Riff. Good riff.
Okay.
Cool.
Signing off, I guess. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Haley.
And I'm Cece.
And this has been OG Influencers.